here from Yale, from Harvard, pick the school. It defies reason.
Let's get one. Okay. Get one, because that
I would do it.
Is the unthinkable.
This is Tom DeLonge from Angels and Airwaves.
When you kind of piece apart the way the buildings exploded, it seemed to echo the way big buildings are demolition. We can describe that 2 weeks before 9/11, there was teams of people that were entering the World Trade Center doing things that were unknown to most, shutting off the security systems and whatnot. We do know that the buildings were made to withstand incendiary temperatures thousands of degrees more than what was happening when it all went down. We do know that the buildings came down in a fashion extremely similar to a controlled demolition of a building. There's no possible way that it could have happened the way to describe, and we're talking about 60-70% of the American people are actually starting to think that there's a different story. Why are we, as Americans, sitting back and letting this happen to us? I think that this is a huge challenge for Americans to not let them be defined this way and to actually stand up and do something that can not only better our own life, but better the world.
Small World Radio would like to thank everybody who was in the show and all the broadcasters who brought them to you. The contents today are used under the Fair Use Clause. We have every right to do so. I am Red Sun, and you are listening to Small World Radio. SmallWorldRadio.net, a signal of love.
The Medea complex. Those who listen closely to these comments know that I...
The Tangerine Dream Team Show, and I am welcoming the Living Devotion Singers from the Sanctuary of Living Devotion. We will speak with them as the show goes on.
Up next on the stream of Freak Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides yet again for all you hardcore fans. It's the October 6th, 2011 show. I'll be doing this alone, but I may be having some help on the ground from a correspondent from the Occupy Santa Cruz campsite or encampment or place of protest or General Assembly, whatever it is, out there in San Lorenzo Park, which is happening as we speak. I just came from San Lorenzo Park after a rainy day when I've been indoors, but everybody else, or everybody else there, or some of the people there, have been outdoors. They're setting up a canopy, planning for a General Assembly. Not sure exactly what's coming up next, but maybe we'll get some reports from there. And sort of as a preview, here's a few brief interviews that I did a few minutes ago to begin the show. You are tuned, of course, to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz in the past at 101.1 FM, hopefully again in the future on that particular place on the dial. But right now, I understand we're at freakradio.org, the stream. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772. And you can also catch me off air at 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. So think about that one and listen to this. Once I set it up, of course.
Well, it's so easily to do that.
It's October 6th, about 5:30, and I'm down here at the Occupy Santa Cruz San Lorenzo Park encampment, kind of right between the path and the lawn bowling area. We have a bunch of folks setting up a canopied area with covered with tarp, perhaps in anticipation of rain tonight. With me is photojournalist Alex DeRosi. Alex DeRosi, and have you been here all day? Or?
Well, I've been here on and off 10 to 12:30, then I came back at around 3.
And what's the story? Have the police given any problems to the folks here?
Yeah, they came by at around, 4:30. And the first two park rangers from Santa Cruz City came by and instructed people in the group here that they were in violation of an ordinance.
Which one?
9.05 or 9.50.03, and it's something like abuse of a tree. Or not.
Oh, and what kind of abuse were these criminals doing?
They had put up a tarp and tied it to four trees with a cork bark, but I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
So did the offending tree huggers or tree tires do something about this? Did they remove the item?
It was a lengthy process of first communicating with the rangers what they were exactly being asked to do and why, and it was on the authority of the superintendent of the parks of the city of Santa Cruz, and so it was a long process of the
Steve group. Hammack, I believe.
Well, I think his last name was Mora.
Oh, really? Maybe it's changed. I know there was Danette Shoemaker, who's actually the boss of all the Parks and Rec. But
the Rangers didn't actually know how to spell his last name, which I guess it has a...
Did they end up giving a ticket?
No. They waited fairly patiently. I mean, well, I guess that's debatable because at a certain point, five police officers wound up coming all in all.
For what purpose?
I guess they assisted the, and I'm just interpreting this, they assisted the rangers in communicating with the people a little more.
What was their message? Just untie it from that tree, you dirty rats?
Untie it right away.
And did they?
Well, by that time, Steve Plage came by, and he's working with the legal working group, and he was able to help the group reach consensus and communicate that to the officers that, yes, they would take it down, and they started taking it down in front of the officers, and all five left before it was actually taken down, but it went down.
And so it was all about, where was this so-called sacred tree that they were...
Right behind these two tarps here.
Oh, I see. So there's a on the other side. So the structure, this freestanding structure has been set up between the trees instead of on the tree. Here comes one of those notorious criminals now.
Turn that off. I'll talk to you for a second.
We have a secret. I have to pause here. Well, the group of people here is about, we're looking 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, maybe 60 folks here. Kind of chatting along the path, and you know, there's kind of a quiet, mellow atmosphere. Looks like a mixture of young and old folks, mostly men, but a number of women here. I'd say women are outnumbered 2 or 3 to 1, but they are here. Let me wander on over and see if I can catch a few of this. Any reports from the park here for free radio?
Free radio?
Mr. Painted Face Guy, so you have dots on your nose.
What kind of reports are you looking?
Well, I don't know. I understand that are people planning to sleep here, or are they just going to put up a tent, chat a while, and leave?
I am at least fully planning on sleeping here, and hoping other people do as well, just because I can't do it alone.
What is your name, Mr. Sleep Criminal Man?
Casey.
Okay. And I see there's some food over there. Does this mean you intend to feed the hungry masses?
It
looks like food, anyway.
People tend to feed themselves, so I won't just feed them.
Kind of bring your own lunch kind of thing?
No, I will bring the supplies. You cook the meal.
Who's we?
Everyone.
I see. Everyone will bring and everyone will eat.
Indeed, because everyone needs to.
Fair enough. Anything happened this afternoon of note that free radio listeners should hear about?
They tried to... they were complaining about our tarp being tied to trees, so we just got standalone tarps that don't need to be tied to trees. So that was about it. But, you know, tonight's the first night of the occupation, and I'm sure they're going to try to implement some type of power against it. So.
Oh, you cynic, you. So, fair enough. Well, you know, hopefully you'll call in to Free Radio Santa Cruz if anything exciting happens.
Yeah, Thursday and Sunday, right?
That's tonight. In about 15 minutes, the show begins.
Wow, you better get walking over there.
I better head over. Walking? Hell no. I have a motor vehicle.
Where's your sustainability?
Indeed. That's the question. I think I lost it. But maybe, who knows? I may one day find it.
That's what we're
We're talking to an innocent observer. What's your name, sir?
My name's Francis.
And Francis, you're standing sort of apart from the group, surveying the scene. What do you see?
I see a collection of people looking for some changes. Some
are you one
changes.
Of them?
Yes. Yeah.
And where are you from?
I'm from Santa Cruz. I live in SoCal. I'm from Santa Cruz.
And are you coming prepared to stay the night, or are you just taking a quick look?
I'm here for the General Assembly, but I'm... I can't stay tonight.
But you'll contribute to the discussion, perhaps.
Hopefully, at least I'll be listening. And yeah.
And what do you hope to see happen here?
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure myself. What I'd like to see. I guess that's sort of why I'd like to see what other people think.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with
Francis.
Thank you, Francis. You're looking at one of Becky Johnson's signs, free Linda LeMaster, facing 6 months.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, PJ. For sleeping PC-647E. And Becky is about to be interviewed by a Sedona Hill Press reporter, so I will withdraw. Free Gary Johnson, free Ed Fry, and then there's a sign, Occupy, your guide to the international occupation movement of 2011. Available online.
Occupied long enough to take back.
The next step, perhaps?
She's now facing.
Thank you. I'm en route to the studio.
I got one for you.
Your name is?
David.
Hit it, David.
Lord and his country met me in the street. Tried to hold me with great big hands, and he told me what to eat. He clothed me in white fine cloth that stretched past my feet. You said everything would be brilliant when you all worked for me. And there's nothing to lose.
And I think we're going to lose that one at the moment. However, we do have a contact at the actual pre-assembly, general assembly. Can you hear me there, caller?
Yeah, it's faint, but I've got you. Oh, I see Chris. He's with Ed.
Okay, well, either way, I mean, you were describing the group there, which actually had only about 40 or 50 people when I was there 15 minutes ago. It seems to be growing in anticipation of the 6 o'clock general assembly.
Yeah, I'd say it's at least 150 people right now, 100 people, 125.
Where are the police officers?
You know, they're probably watching from the county building or something like that. That's pure speculation on my part. I actually saw a cop
parking as I pulled away. But who knows? Maybe he was making a call to help a kindly old lady with a heart problem.
That's probably so. And I'll bet she passed out on the river levee, too.
Ah, well, I don't know about that. You know, that's a different sort of situation.
Haven't seen any of that today, but I did see a sign put up by the Occupy movement, no drugs or alcohol. So very clear what people are intending here.
No drugs or alcohol. Has there been the smell of marijuana wafting through the breeze? And if not, why not?
You know, that's exactly my question. I have not smelled it at all during these protests, and I'm not exactly sure. You know, I don't know the general makeup of the group, but they don't seem like big smokers.
Yeah,
I've definitely smelled it a lot more talking just to people hanging out on the river.
And there are a lot of homeless people who frequent the park, some who use it as their home, although
yeah.
It is illegal to be in the park after dark. Has dark fallen there yet? I'm indoors, so I can't tell.
No, we have at least an hour before the sun even starts to get that low. And it's still shining and still warm.
Well, that's good. Have you had much conversation with the folks actually use the park, albeit surreptitiously, 24 hours a day in order to rest and recuperate and medicaid and so forth?
Oh, yeah. I've been talking to a lot of different people who, you know, this is their home, however you define that, if they're just here most days or if they're here in the evening, too. And certainly people, you know, they live here. And, you know, depending on what your definition of that is, there's a variety of definitions of that, and they do all of that here. And they're generally, you know, a very friendly group towards the protesters. The people who live here like the protesters, but there have been some incidents, and there have been some concerns raised by the people who live here that the movement is against them. I literally heard one person say that he thought he was being targeted by the protests, and so there's some misperception probably on some part, but probably an accurate perception, because some of the rhetoric has been what I would call bordering anti-homeless, prioritizing this movement and not really bringing up homeless issues as if it's not part of this movement somehow.
Well, tell me more about that. When did you hear this rhetoric, and from whence did it come?
Well, you know, I can't directly quote one of the leaders, so I don't want to mention him by name because he gets a lot of attention as it is, and hopefully it's okay for the reporting, and I don't have the exact quote, but he said something like this movement is not about getting houses for people, you know, something very general statement, and one of the people who lives in the park, and I actually do know that he is homeless, he told me he was a young man, and he said he was homeless to the point where he's becoming feral. You know, and it obviously concerned him. And he said, well, what he's here a part of this movement for is getting people houses. His understanding was that was part of it. So, you know, and this was someone, you know, there's no clear leadership, but this is someone who has emerged as one of the people other people follow, and he's doing a lot of the, you know, the organizing and the facilitating.
You're not talking about Steve Plaich by any chance?
No.
Because I know Steve is a homeless legal assistance project person, misdescribed in tomorrow's Sentinel as an attorney, but a person who's probably done more work for the homeless than a number of attorneys, almost all the attorneys in town put together, with the exception of a few. Is this a famous person on the political landscape? I mean, if it's a person with, you know, harboring anti-homeless sentiments, I think he, like any politician or leader, needs to be, just talked to, called to account, that sort of thing.
Well, the thing is, I didn't record it. I don't have the exact quote, and I just can't, you know, attribute any statement towards him except that it was perceived as an anti-homeless sentiment.
You perceived it, or somebody else perceived it that way?
Someone else perceived it, because I went back and, you know, after I heard him say that, that's what he was here for. He was the young man who was homeless and who feels like he's feral now. He said, well, that's what he's here for. And then I went back later and I asked him about, you know, what the leader said, and he could not remember exactly either, but his conclusion was, he said, after he heard that, he said, yeah, just what I thought. This is a movement about yuppies run by yuppies.
Huh. So it's, now, are we talking about one of the facilitators from last night or from two nights ago? Or are we?
Yeah, one of the main people building consensus. And
I think everybody has a different view as to what their particular emphasis is in this protest. That was my perception when I was at the General Assembly last night. And I think there is a broad rubric, a broad focus on, you know, Occupy Wall Street solidarity. But I think there's a deepening and, you know, broadening perspective, too, around the idea of holding politicians, power mongers, the wealthy, financiers, et cetera, police, and who protect these people, accountable for what they do, and not only holding them accountable, trying to make some fundamental changes so they won't be able to do tomorrow what they are doing today and did yesterday.
Yeah, that's the underlying sentiment, is that, you know, general feeling that, you know, we want to shake up the power elite. But beyond that, people with the practical ideas, you know, and real motivation to start changing things, it seems like a lot of those people are fragmented into what they want to see achieved. And it seems similar to a lot of what I perceive as fragmentation in the political landscape, where people, you know, they have their pet issues and they're having trouble.
People getting together to put up some tarps, and there was some actual work being done. I know that was one of the things that encouraged me on Tuesday night, when the first General Assembly happened, was people split up into different groups and seemed to be intent, at least on seeming to plan for concrete activities. We're beginning with the encampment that was supposed to start at 10 a.m. this morning, but was kind of presumably delayed or by the rain, though there were some hardy souls, perhaps you were among them, who got soaked.
Yeah, I had my umbrella out.
You did have your umbrella.
And a lot of people did. It was great. And, you know, a lot of people just got soaked and braved the rain. And it was good spirits overall. But I guess I might be nitpicking a little, but I just based on other movements I've followed, when you come in with a stronger leadership, those leaders usually have already done a lot of the prep work, where they know certain issues need to be addressed immediately. And, you know, the whole process, the consensus process and building consensus, it takes a while to address these issues that we normally are, you know, very aware of. Like, there are homeless people in San Lorenzo Park, and maybe we shouldn't be occupying here because we're occupying their home. So, you know,
is that the general opinion of the homeless folks, or only of a few individuals?
You know, some people are supportive of the movement, and, you know, they get a little charged from it. I'd say most people are pretty much don't have an opinion on it. But then there is a very visible group of people that had a problem with it earlier in the day, quite a few different people. But as of late, there have been no problems, and so maybe some of the bugs are getting ironed out. But it's definitely my belief that this was not the ideal spot because it's someone's home.
Huh. So your sympathies were with those who would like to maybe move the occupation to another spot?
Yeah, I would lean that way, or even down the way into the county property. That would be probably the best first move, and that's what a lot of people are talking about, proposing that they move to the county property.
Right, for those who do
something about the location right now, it's a bit close to where people have their established areas where they hang out. So it's probably just because of a hasty first decision on where to locate.
I think I may have mentioned already. I played some of the earlier discussion I had with you about a half an hour ago, and then a couple blips and blurps from the other interviews. And I may have said then that it seems likely people are going to move to the county property because of the couple of considerations. One is that the city patrols the parks and the San Lorenzo Park in particular, and is in the past they've been harsher in some respects than the county in giving out tickets to the protesters of a year ago who were doing the same thing. I mean, they didn't camp in San Lorenzo Park. They camped over at City Hall.
Yeah.
But, not only were they, ticketed for sleeping a night under the sleeping ban, 6.36010A, not only were they given, misdemeanor lodging tickets under the Penal Code 647E, which is a misdemeanor crime, which a couple of folks are still facing trial for, and some have been sentenced to 6 months for sleeping.
And I imagine the legal groups have addressed that. The legal working groups have addressed
not that,
that
I've
here.
Heard.
You,
not that
oh,
I've heard.
Oh, not that you've heard, yes. No, I haven't heard that
maybe
either.
Maybe you've heard it, too. But, I mean, what I'm saying is that in addition to that, the city cooked up new rules that created new forbidden zones that were illegal not just to sleep in or to set up a tent in or to tie something to a tree in, but to even be in. And the entire San Lorenzo Park, and this is the second consideration, is, in fact, closes at dusk. Why? Because those who are in power passed that ordinance back in the early 80s, I think, because the residents in the surrounding area didn't like the hippies there at night. And so that's going to be a real issue as to what the local residents think, because there are numerous apartment buildings bordering the park.
There's been quite a, not to, I don't have a real objective way to gauge it, but there's been various noise levels that have been achieved, and the apartments are right next to the lawn bowling, which is adjacent to the current location of the protest.
But again, a lot of this is just, I am enthusiastic to see that that folks are reclaiming public space. I mean, in fact, this is fairly distant from any apartments. We're talking at least a city block away. And it's, there is really nobody around to be disturbed at night in that area. So it is a false claim that this is actually in any way a bother to other people. It's it's a use of the park that will result in some use, but then again, that's what public parks were made for, particularly in trying times when people need places to assemble.
I'd have to agree with you. This is about as mild of a location as can be chosen, and if there's any indication of the police arriving earlier on what they're thinking, how they want to handle the situation, it's not looking good so far. I think they're going to come down on it. They have five officers came to handle the tarp. I wonder what's going to happen when.
It could be that if a lot of people are determined to stay there, then the police may think it's more trouble than it's worth. Because at the same time as we have this occupation happening, we also have the fact that the jails and the state prisons stuffed with drug war prisoners and other people for driving on a suspended license and other serious crimes of that kind, poverty crimes, in other words, have been released into county jails. And the idea being that the jails are stuffed, and they're going to get even stuffier if they're not really stuffed enough for the stuffy people who run them. I think police may not be so eager to arrest people and to take them into custody, because when they do that, it also produces a backlash among the community. I mean, you might be able to malign homeless people and call them dirty, scummy, drug
users. They're calling the General Assembly to order. I think I better let you go, Robert.
All right. Do you want to broadcast some of it? Can we actually hear it through your phone, do you think?
No, I don't think you can through my phone.
Okay, well then, get back to us when you think something has broken that's important, and we'll get back to you.
Thanks, Robert. I'll give you a call.
All right, man. Thank you.
Bye.
And that was Alex DeRosi at the San Lorenzo Park, the Occupy Santa Cruz protest. Looks like I have an incoming call. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio Stream with Robert. turn down your computer. Hello? It doesn't sound like that person perhaps wanted to be off air. I don't know. Or possibly we have a bad connection. Looks like we are connected. So try again, caller. You can also try the other line, 469-3119, 469-3119. And that's something you can do to call in. This is, of course, I'm trying to do some live broadcasting from the San Lorenzo Park. I'm not over there, but others are with cell phones. And through the miracle of modern technology, whoopee-doo, we can get in touch for those who want to fry their brains with the cell phones, so to speak. I have a lot of interviews from earlier shows that I'm going to start playing because I don't know if I have a lot to say about the Occupy Santa Cruz activity, project, explosion, spring, if you will, or fall, whatever, autumn. And I'm going to be there tonight, sleeping there tonight probably. And so I may have more of a report in the morning, although often you can see even less on the ground than from a distance. So it necessarily means I'm going to have any more to tell. And I won't be back on the air probably until Sunday morning when I have another show at 9:30. We are going to be, I think, hearing from Ventura attorney Jay Lederman, who is a... was attorney for Chris Doyen, who in a press conference said he was also Commander X, who has been indicted for crimes involving denial of service attacks on the Santa Cruz County website in support of another encampment for justice a year ago, Peace Camp 2010, for which absurd and expensive trials are still continuing. I suppose also what I'm going to do, if I can find it here, is talk a little bit about the U.S. Supreme Court decision on Monday, which was to turn down the attempt of the city to stop the trial of three mayors that I'm suing for false arrest for their behavior about, 7 to 9 years ago, 2004, and in 2002, and I've talked about that, at length on the air, and you can read about it online, too, and consider, since everyone here is online who's listening to this at the moment, if you're listening on Thursday, the 6th of October, I don't know if there's a lot of need to talk a lot about the case, but I'm going to say a little bit about the case. I don't have a lot of new information. It's just, this is the case of the mock Nazi salute when the mayor broke his word, cut short oral communications, threatened people with arrest. And so my response was, instead of a scream of anguish and pain, which might have been more appropriate, I just quietly raised my hand in a brief Nazi salute, smiled, and turned to talk to the person who had been excluded from the mic, a woman named Susan Zeman. And then 2 years, and I was arrested for it, arrested essentially because I wouldn't leave the council after being told to leave, that I was a bad boy, that you're not allowed to give those kinds of, you're acting like a fascist, gestures at the sacred city council. And after all, they are, we are in, the temple of the Lord and that sort of thing. But obviously that's not true, and the DA refused to prosecute. 2 years later, another mayor, Mayor Scott Kennedy, the mayor who did the first one was Christopher Crone, with essentially acting on the initiative of Tim Fitzmaurice. I'll talk more about this. There was a second arrest in 2004, and both these cases will now go to trial, not against me, but against the mayors who did the arrests. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Oh, hey, this is Commander X calling.
Hey, Commander X.
I just wanted to let you know, I'm walking to the studio from the occupation, so...
Wait a minute, why aren't you staying for the General Assembly?
Well, we are. I'm going back, but you had a call-in, so I was told, I was there on the ground, you had a call-in report from the ground, and I'm heading back to the studio to do the rest of the show with you up there.
Oh, sounds good.
I can tell you all about what's going on. No, it's happening, it's hopping, we've occupied...
Okay. Anything else?
Well, that's a good success for day number one.
No, I think it is. I've noticed a number of people there. Have you you think there are a number of people who intend to stay the night?
I think so, yeah. And you know, I think it'll be in the dozens, if not over 100, and we'll take it from there. I mean, you know, smaller things have started from smaller packages, so you know, it is Santa Cruz, but I'm very impressed with the turnout so far. I think it's going to be just fine.
Well, you know, you were actually there for much of the, at least the first half of the Peace Camp 2010 protest a year ago. How does this compare with that? You were only a block away, right?
Right. Well, we were right on the courthouse. I mean, the comparison is that it was a single issue occupation, and this is obviously has much more fluid message. I mean, one thing that I got from it.
You know, Chris, you're breaking up. So I'll wait till you hit the studio to do more of this discussion. Are you en route?
I'm
en route. Yeah, it's not because you're is it what you sound like? So let's wait till you get here. I'll talk to you when you get here.
You will.
Sounds
See
good. And that's Commander X, A.K.A. Christopher Doyen, who I call Curb Hugger Chris. Who is who faces 15 years in jail for allegedly bringing down the County of Santa Cruz's website for half an hour in December in protest against the county's treatment of the homeless people in Santa Cruz, specifically the protesters who are peacefully trying to bring to the attention of the community the fact that not only is there no legal place for people to sleep, but they get arrested if they try to do it. Even though they aren't being given any other options, which, of course, is kind of, to me, the basis of cruel and unusual punishment. And it's just really clear that there is the criminals are not the people who are being prosecuted, but the ones who are doing the prosecuting. They're covering up the crimes of the people in power, which is sort of in keeping with the theme of the Occupy Wall Street protests throughout the country. I'm going to kind of take a look at Occupy Together, which is a website which I was referred to in some email, which is really an amazing website. Yesterday morning, there were 234 cities or something across the United States who had begun individual Occupy actions. Occupy Chicago, Occupy Evanston, Occupy New York, Occupy LA. Eight or 10 hours later, there were 330 occupations. This morning there were 430 occupations, more or less. Again, I don't know if the number is exact, but this huge explosion of occupies is just, wow. I mean, gives one a lot of hope. And I want to see what's going on now on the Occupy Together website. Let's see what we can find here. Occupy Together. Let's see, when we look at Occupy Together, we see... I'm waiting for the site to clear. Wow, I can't believe it. It's gone from 400 and some to 790 cities. Meetups in 790 cities. That means they're not actually necessarily occupations going on right now. In fact, when you click further, you find there's 847 Occupy Together cities. And I'm not sure which figure is more correct, because it's growing all the time. And then there's a map that shows you on the Occupy Together website of all the different places which have occupations. The majority of them are in Europe and the United States, but there are also a number in, it looks like, either Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, some in India. A number in Africa, a number in the Middle East. It's just, it's the kind of thing that I guess Keith McHenry and I would dream about. He was the Food Not Bombs co-founder, that people would begin to say no to the war or the wars that the United States is pursuing against the populations of different countries in the Middle East and in the, not the Far East, but the Afghanistan, Pakistan area. It's kind of beyond the Middle East. by, he suggested a year and a half or 2 years ago, just everyone sleeping in at the federal buildings. And a couple of months ago, McHenry suggested people sleep out at their city halls in protest of the Orlando, Florida attack on food servers, which we did here in Santa Cruz. And Casey, one of the guys you heard talking on the radio, intends to sleep earlier today on the stream, actually, but here on the station, intends to stay the night. And this, he's not alone this time. He isn't going to be picked up by the police with a ticket as he was last time, 2 months ago, with a ticket under the city's infamous sleeping ban. This time he has dozens of people with him. And it always kind of heartens me when the bullies have to deal with mass resistance like this. And it's just, it does my old heart good to see it, I must say. But, you know, while I'm waiting for Kerbugger Chris, or Commander X, as he now calls himself, to show up in the studio as my co-host, I want to continue playing some tapes I was playing last time, just to kind of not lose track entirely with the usual flow of my show. I was recording a police activity, a relatively small incident involving a shoplifter who took a white cotton T-shirt from Eco Goods, according to what I later understood. And there were three squad cars there to deal with him, two of them blocking lanes of traffic at the corner of Laurel and Pacific, as though this were some sort of major crime scene. And the guy didn't even get a ticket because Eco Goods would not file charges. And he also claimed he was, well, you'll hear him talk about this as a political protest. And we join him, the whole situation, as Officer Azua, who I have been accusing of, as I understand it from the accounts from Cynthia Kennedy, an activist who was, by her account, roughed up, slammed to the sidewalk by Officer Azua. He's a very big and burly police officer a year and a half ago, with no consequences I'm aware of in the department, somewhat similar to the blank check given to Officer Winston, who slammed Curtis Chad three times about the legs with a police baton for no apparent reason. And I'm concerned, this is by the account of three witnesses, and I keep mentioning these two cases because they're the most blatant ones I found. Officer Zua jumped out of the car and came up to me and wanted to shake my hand. That's where this tape begins. You're not going to hear a lot of it, but I mean, it's a little hard to hear. Let's hear it anyway. You can shake his hand. He likes it. Go ahead, shake his hand. Shake, come on. Come on. He won't shake your hand. What's going on, man? What happened here was I didn't want to shake Officer Azua's hand. And that should be obvious why not. I feel a couple of reasons. First, I don't like being forced into shaking somebody's hand who I don't particularly want to shake the hand of. Second of all, I feel I have good reasons not to shake his hand, given his record that I'm still announcing on the radio. And then thirdly, this reminds me too much of politicians who run around like Tony Madrigal does, sticking out his hand, shaking everyone's hand as though that means something, when in fact it's really a sort of a phony connection that has very little to do with paying any attention to the real nature of the person you're talking to, or even their concerns on an abstract level. Officer Azua, I thought you were a friendly guy.
It's good publicity.
Well, how come you won't shake his hand? Now, come on. I asked him to shake the hand of the former defendant who was now being released as a kind of a scrawny kid who had, again, stolen a white T-shirt and gotten a lecture from Officer Albert about how stealing was wrong, even though he wasn't going to be given a ticket. And Officer Albert won't shake your hand? This is supposed to be a friendly police force? After they spent half an hour of city time, half an hour of city time and money blocking a lane of traffic, two different squad cars with a third across the street. For what? A T-shirt! Well done, Officer Albert! And, of course, a moral lecture. Officer Azua, don't forget Cynthia McKinney. She's keeping an eye on you.
It's like this story.
One of these... That's Cynthia Kennedy. Cynthia McKinney, of course, is someone else.
I better get this, guys. So what happened? Give us the update. What's your name?
Thank you. I went in there earlier, and I was talking to those ladies, and I was asking them how they felt about, like stealing fair wages from Chinese children because they have clothes that are made in China, which
what store?
Eco Goods.
Okay.
And they told me that, like, it didn't matter, that all their stuff was eco-friendly. And I was like, it's made out of cotton. That's not even eco-friendly. It's not even, like, renewable. It's not a very good renewable resource. And so, like, if you're eco-friendly, it'd be, like, bamboo or hemp or something.
But they didn't.
And they didn't have any. Yeah.
So what happened then?
So they are eco-friendly.
And then I told her, I said, I'll probably jack something from your store.
And what did they say then?
And they just let it go out. And I said, yeah, I'm going to come back and I'm going to get it for those kids.
And how long after did you go in to do this?
About an hour.
And did you do it? Did you run or did you walk? What happened?
I just straight up went in there, grabbed the shirt, and walked out.
And
then just kept walking.
And how far away are we from that store?
We're pretty far.
And so what happened then? When did the police stop you?
I believe Eco Goods is next to New Leaf Market at Soquel and Pacific, whereas we were talking at Laurel and Pacific, which is a good three or four blocks, long blocks away. Well, two or three long blocks away anyway.
Right as I got by the Taco Bell at Laurel and Pacific.
What did they say to you?
They asked me if I had the shirt, if I'd stolen anything. Then I knew they were going to search me, so I was like, you know, yep, I did. And I told them why I did it.
A firm lecture from Officer Albert on how not to make a political protest.
That's right, but he was nice. I couldn't say so much about the lady friend since she almost fingered me.
Well, maybe she liked you.
I don't know.
What was her name? Did you notice?
I don't know, but I know her badge number is 130.
Who have you been talking with?
Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan. Well, I'm in the Saturn Cafe talking with
Jordan Hampton.
And you are visiting from L.A.?
Yes.
And you say you have an incident of questionable police behavior?
Yes, it was 2 years ago, and there was two crimes going on. And one was a white male, and the other one was a black male who was homeless. And the white male had shoplifted, like, something from one of the gift shops. It was, like, one of the Hollywood memorabilia. And the black homeless man had, what did he do? I think he'd went in and caused the scene, and it was disorderly conduct. And he hadn't actually stolen anything, but was, you know, was making a scene inside the store, and they went and handled him and let the shoplifter run away. And I just thought it was funny, coincidentally, that they happened to deal with a guy that was one homeless and two African-American, and then the one white guy who wasn't homeless got to get away.
So you tackled both policemen, and they all got away.
I sure wish. But, yeah, it was a really miraculous scene to witness. I mean, I really couldn't believe it. You know, like, you would think that the guy that's causing disorderly conduct, you just leave him alone and go get the guy that's actually committing a real crime. You know, that's going to actually, like, negatively affect someone's wallet. Versus the guy that's just sitting there, you know, and bothering someone, that someone's annoyed. But,
there you have it, an L.A. tale. We've been talking with
Jordan Hampton.
Thank you, Jordan. Should be on. I'm talking with Tom Kelly, who's retired, but not retired. He's now working in Riverside. How long did you work here, Tom, when you were judge?
How long in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
25 years.
And what finally drove you to retire?
You and your friends.
I never knew. In fact, was it health? Was it a better job? Was it a desire to do something else?
Well, it's actually a period where everything vested in terms of time on the bench, retirement. And I also...
You got out when the pension was good?
Still money, although it's an unfunded pension.
How did things change in the 25 years you were in Santa Cruz? Did you notice a change? And what were the changes in the town and the kinds of cases that came before you? If you saw such a thing.
I know it was certainly a lot more violence in the earlier days, and a lot of gang-related violence.
In the 80s?
Well, as time went on, it got a little less friendly, laid back, a little harder edge.
In the early days?
Well, the later days were worse.
Were worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about, you know, one issue that, of course, that always came up in your court was homeless civil rights issues, where we would come in around the sleeping ban, and you actually had a historic decision in 1997 when, you may remember, Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins came into court with a whole bunch of cases around the sleeping ban, and you were asked to rule on the constitutionality of the sleeping ban, and you said it's constitutional because they can sleep during the day. Do you remember that?
Sounds like something I would say.
Do you think you'd still make the same decision now? It's hard, of course, because it's many years later. Hey, you did. But I still like you. It was a passing person.
Well, my position hasn't changed in terms of...
You're not on the bench now anymore, you know.
I am.
But you're not on the bench in Santa Cruz anymore.
But I am around the state and could be in Santa Cruz as well.
So you could be back trying these sleep criminals again.
In fact, I have a notice out to the court when they get you on something that has legs, they're to call me.
I'll be the first to call you as well.
They'll always paper me, though, so I'll never have the pleasure.
If we can find an attorney that wants to bother with me these days. You know, Ray has gone to China, you know.
Ray, he has.
Ray Glockrenek has gone to China.
What's he doing there?
He is, I believe he's working there with his wife. They're teaching, I believe, in some Chinese university. He has to deal with a whole bunch of debts before he can again become, you know, get back into the bar, so...
Well, he's a brilliant fellow and a definite loss to the community. He was one of the few attorneys that had no income constraint. If he felt something was worth doing, he would do it regardless of personal cost.
And hence, he couldn't complete a number of cases, got a number of complaints, and was disbarred.
Too generous with his time.
If you were to see reforms in the court statewide, is there anything you'd particularly go after that you'd recommend to Commission on Judicial Performance or whatever body is, you know, recommending those kinds of reforms?
Well, I'm anxious to see how the new felony sentencing scheme works out. It starts next week. It involves placing low-risk folks, giving them local time rather than state prison time. In Santa Cruz, that's never been a big issue. Generally, the ones that we sent to prison were the ones that truly posed a danger to the community.
Andrews Corr for trespassing on...
Or you and just anything we could get you on.
Yeah, well, understandably.
But...
And, you know, he and I keep joking. In a way, it's kind of embarrassing. I'm giving former Judge Tom Kelly a softball interview here. You know, and part of it is this, you know, it's the adulation of power. Oh, I'm talking to a judge, you know, or a former judge, or a judge who is formerly in Santa Cruz. He was actually the presiding judge for quite a while. And he was one of the few judges who actually, wasn't it his judgments were any better generally than Judge Attic or Judge Salazar or... Judge Barton, any of those older guys, who many of whom are retired or gone now. But it's more that he would allow little liberties. Like, he gave me a press pass so I could park my vehicle as a street shit sheet reporter. He allowed recordings in court of what went down. He actually, one has to say, he had some interest in seeking political rather than solutions rather than legal diktats, although I think a couple of strong legal decisions, you know, just cutting away this unconstitutional sleeping ban would have been and still would be a very good response to this whole situation, so we can actually deal with more important issues, with other issues. This is one of the most important issues, the right to sleep, for sure, but, you know, other issues are involved in living a decent life for people who are finding themselves homeless for one reason or another, who have chosen to be houseless and who are being harassed for doing so, or middle-class people who are dropping into poverty because of the unequal application of the law and the unequal nature of the laws. Judges bear a serious responsibility for that, and I'm not holding him accountable in this interview. I should be. My problem is... if I'm to hold him accountable in this sort of way, the angry way that perhaps he needs to be held accountable, he wouldn't talk to me, maybe. You know, that's the kind of fear that besets us journalists in those circumstances. And I don't think, you know, when I have a clear point of focus, I don't mind calling out politicians who subsequently, like Ryan Coonerty, the mayor, won't talk to me. I mean, I don't mind, you know, wailing at him on the street and wailing at him on the street, metaphorically speaking. But Kelly, I kind of liked as a person, and unfortunately, you know, he was also more important than his personhood because he never invited me to dinner or anything like that. I mean, we didn't really know each other that well, but he was, you know, he was an amiable guy. I mean, you might say Bob Lee, the DA, who's making life miserable for Ed Fry and homeless people and the Peace Camp 2010 prosecutions and busting medical marijuana dispensaries, is a good guy. He's real friendly. He'll smile at you. He'll shake your hand. And, you know, he facilitates some of the inquiries that I've made in the past. Unfortunately, that does not make him a good guy, and it's a real question, you know, how journalists can deal with that kind of thing. And I guess I do a little mea culpa here on the air, my guilt, my fault. Let's hear some more.
A lot of other, I found that through my years that justice is a function of time and place. Over time, I've seen changes. When I started out, marijuana was a felony. Now it's an infraction.
Hasn't marijuana always been a low-grade misdemeanor in California as possession from 1975 on? You weren't a judge in 75.
No, I was a prosecutor, though, in 73.
Ah, so it was when you started.
It was a felony. Uh-huh. And so there is something where you see over time community mores change.
Of course, it didn't, you know, we don't really have changes in the sense that people have the right that they've been entitled to since time immemorial, but haven't been able to assert in this country in the last 80 years or so, more than that maybe, of being able to medicate with medical marijuana or other medications of their choice without being criminalized. There's a huge system of criminalization built up into this. And this Judge Kelly has probably made life miserable for thousands of people with sentences. You know? I mean, for some reason, I just didn't think of that while I was schmoozing with him on the sidewalk.
The other side, driving under the influence, started out at 0.15, was where we would often reduce down to lesser charges to reckless drives. The burden was 1-0 or higher, the presumption of under the influence.
How come Art Danner never got prosecuted under that one?
Well, he was never good for it.
I see.
Anyway, that's one thing where I've seen the laws go in different directions over time.
Right.
And as I travel around the state, judging in different communities, I also see different community norms of punishment. Santa Cruz, like I say, it took a lot to get into prison here. It had generally had
prison
to be...
Prison or jail?
We're talking prison.
Right.
You know, the people that...
Because the jails are packed, and they always have been packed. So, you know, here I am again, you know, letting Tom get away with stuff. I didn't think of this, though, as he was talking. A lot of these are what I call l'esprit de l'escalier, the spirit of the back stairs that you think of later as you walk up the steps, you know, going home. Or if you have a back stairway in your house, if you're that kind of a property owner. Mm.
We went the extra mile with the drug addicts and people that where there's some rehabilitation hope. But in some jurisdictions, away from the coast, in my experience, it's can be substantially tougher, and virtually everybody goes to prison. So it's going to be interesting to see how this change of the law plays out starting next week when the low-risk offenders no longer are sent off to do their time in state prison.
Because they can't kill them fast enough in the San Francisco prisons with the health concerns, because the inability to meet the health needs of the prisoners, the feds have ruled they have to...
Robert, you haven't changed.
Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to... confirming the fact.
We just don't have the money, the facilities, and it's time to have a new paradigm. And if this works out well, and these folks, in fact... can do well in the community, then we've all learned an important lesson.
Of course, this is a ridiculous argument in a certain sense. It's an argument by liberals for, you know, getting rid of some of the prisoners in the jails, which I agree with, but the idea that somehow people are going to feel a lot better now that they've been held for years and years, and then they're released you know, with, I don't know, ankle bracelets on for the so-called drug war crimes that they were held for, or this is, you know, driving on a suspended license, or even DUI, you know. I mean, I'm more of a sympathizer of jailing for DUI. That makes more sense to me. But I really think people who are, you know, do DUI should be forced to join medical teams who clean up highway accidents. That's a way to make people be aware of what the real consequences of driving while drunk are. And, you know, but I mean, that's always, maybe that's just, that's sort of been a pet theory of mine, which I always pull out. Anyway, here's some more from retired Judge Tom Kelly, who I ran into on Pacific Avenue in the last week.
Will the folks in Riverside, where you're currently sitting, right?
Right.
Are you able to express the same sentiments down there? And if you are, what kind of a response do you get?
Well, I just handle a small fraction of, you know, everything that's adjudicated down there.
To speech, give speeches on these issues?
No. But I try to bring some of the philosophy from Santa Cruz down there. I don't
go to sleep, go to jail, that sort of thing.
Well, now that you mention it.
You are the father of go to sleep, go to jail.
I am hoping that you come down there sometime.
I'll bring my sleeping bag with me.
And your listeners should also notice you bear a striking resemblance to Fidel Castro.
Oh, I thought it was Osama bin Laden. Luckily, well, supposedly he's no longer with us.
Now it's Fidel, yes.
He's getting awfully old, Fidel.
Oh, so are you, my friend.
Yeah, well, and we're all getting older. Yeah. Anything you want to say to Santa Cruzans who are listening, who may have been sentenced by you in the past, who may have been friendly with you in the past, just for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Well, I miss the town. I miss the people. I really enjoyed my years on the bench, and hope to see you, much rather see you on the street, Robert, than where I used to work.
You're just saying that.
Well, that's true.
Yes.
But we have to close on a good note.
Indeed. Let's be optimistic. We've been talking with
Tom Kelly.
Thank you, Tom.
Good.
We're talking with
Ginny Gum.
Before we go into that, though, in the studio with me, I have the notorious coffee-drinking Kerbugger Chris. I'm sorry, Commander X. Commander X, you just came from the General Assembly of Take Back Santa Cruz. And are they taking
Occupy
back?
Occupy Santa Cruz.
Robert. Take Back Santa Cruz is the other group. I'm a little confused here. Boy,
that's the right-wing patriots.
Yeah,
man.
They're not even around. They are around, I guess. I haven't seen
they're
them.
They're welcome to come camp out. I mean,
yeah,
everybody
should be able to occupy Santa Cruz. It's occupiable. In fact, it's already being occupied.
It's been occupied. I can report that it is successfully occupied. And it's just a wait-and-see attitude from here on out. Now you get through the first night, you know, you see what they're going to do, and but it looks...
You intend to sleep there overnight?
I intend to be there throughout the night. I don't know how much sleep I'll actually get, to be honest with you. I think I'd like to stay awake and be ready to lay some meteor on them if they do decide to do a creeping strike in the middle of the night. I think somebody should be ready with cameras and videos to be on them, so I'll probably be doing that, but I'm going to be there all night for sure. I'm going to occupy in every sense of the word.
But you have a difficulty because you're not allowed to Twitter, isn't that right?
I'm not allowed any sort of social media, and so it's very constrictive.
Your OR condition from your federal indictment.
Correct. As a journalist, any journalist who uses those modern tools knows what a complete rape it is of your free speech and journalistic rights when you're stripped of especially powerful tools like Twitter and Facebook. That really hurts. Yeah, I won't lie to you. It hurts to not be able to tweet. But,
what's the rationale for not doing this? I mean, what basis?
Well, I believe it's a straight up rationale. If you ask me, the rationale is to shut us up. It's to shut all of us activists up, and it's why that kind of restrictions are placed upon any activist. If you're with Earth Liberation Front or Earth First and you get jammed up, that's the first thing they say is don't associate with any, you know, known members of the movement. Don't communicate in certain ways. They'll claim that those ways are nefarious, that they're used for planning purposes.
But Twitter can be used with all kinds of different people, not necessarily just with your
anonymous
confreres.
Well, for us, it's primarily media. Well, for us, it was always used. We had one really big use for it, and that was a media outlet. We like to encourage reporters because we did do a lot of press releases, but we like to encourage reporters to follow the live action and follow the Twitter where we could get things out a lot quicker. So
that sounds like it may be somebody, perhaps Jay Lederman, or is it Lieberman?
Lederman.
I thought it was Lederman. Let's see if we got that. Let's see. It rings again, and I think we're going to actually try to answer it. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Commander X and Uncle Robert.
It's Jay Lederman.
Oh. It is Lederman, not Lieberman. Keep that in mind, caller.
It's my attorney.
Uh-oh. So,
I'm in big trouble.
So you, here you are with your client on the phone. Is there anything you don't want to say that you'd like to tell us right now?
Is there anything that I don't want to say?
Yeah, well, you're more at liberty. You can Twitter, can't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm tweeting right now just to piss X off.
And, oh, Jesus.
I'm kidding.
Now, let me ask you this.
It really hurts.
And I'm still denying that he's X.
I see. Well, of course. Now, of course, you deny he's X. He insists he's X. This could be an case of identity theft. Maybe you're trying to steal.
I'm Spartacus.
I don't know what's going on. But I let me ask you something about this condition that that Chris has here. Can
condition. It sounds like I've got a disease or something.
Well, yeah.
come on,
Twitterlessness. can somebody else Twitter for him, or is that considered a violation of the OR condition?
If it's clearly proxer. That would be proxy tweeting by someone that's sort of acting in his stead that isn't me. That would probably, I mean, if they wanted to stick it to him, they could probably get him on that. If it's me and he's asking me as his lawyer to send a message to the folks out there, as I've done several times over the past several weeks, that's fine. I'm allowed to deliver a message.
For the moment, but you know, we do have drones that know where you are.
Well, I'd like to state for the world that Jay Lederman is not only one of the most masterful attorneys I've ever worked with, but one of the single most patient. I mean, we're talking the patience of a saint. I've put him through the ringer in the last couple of weeks, and it's going to get worse.
Yeah,
he
hasn't
that, so.
Lived with you. Well, that's another story, I guess. So,
well, that might happen, too.
You never can tell. So, Jay, you're calling from Ventura, yes?
I am, yes.
And we've talked in the past about your work in overthrowing the misdemeanor criminality of homeless people for such things as open container that was by turning such things into infractions. Which, you know, to us, kind of, we go the opposite way. We say turn them into misdemeanors and force people to force the court to do an expensive jury trial, and they'll just drop the charge.
Yeah, well, that's certainly you're right. That's afforded.
But you apparently took a different.
Nothing wrong with that.
But you took a different strategy, which was I guess you saw that the Ventura courts were more than happy to take everybody to jury trial or to jack them up and hold them pending trial.
Right, holding. You're exactly right. Yes. Holding was the issue. You know, the issue was, I mean, you can always take a citation for a misdemeanor and say, you know, I don't want it. But when you're conscripted on a misdemeanor and when you're imprisoned on it, obviously against your will, you know, then it becomes a problem. When you're spending, you know, 3, 4, 5 days in jail on a ticket for which you really should only be able to get a fine, you know, it's nice for you to have that choice as to whether you want to.
Yeah, but let's take the devil's advocate position. Here are these homeless people, and suddenly they have 3 hots and a cot, a fine bunk in bed, some colorful pajamas. I mean, what's the problem?
Well, hey, there's no problem at all if that's their choice. Let it be their choice.
Sort of open the jails to those who want to come in, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would save a lot of
You know, actually, that might be a very good
use
of jails. Turn them into alternate housing that's actually voluntary.
Sure, yeah.
That was suggested, yeah. You know, when the mental hospitals were closed down in the 50s, some suggested they should have remained open as voluntary facilities for those who wanted to use them instead of as, you know, snake pits and pens for holding people who were out for social control purposes.
And right.
That wasn't done. Instead, you know, it's just there was a massive deinstitutionalization process that essentially just dumped everybody on the streets with no, they called it community, you know, nursing or community, whatever, community treatment, but it never happened that way. You know, let me just skip now to Occupy Santa Barbara or Ventura. Have you started yet the Occupy Ventura that we know you are going to spearhead?
No. I'm not spearheading it.
My mistake.
It is leaderless. you know, we are trying to follow the lead set by Occupy Wall Street. So it's going to be leaderless. It's going to be consent. We have offered the location for the first meeting tomorrow. The first General Assembly is going to be here tomorrow. We sort of had an informal meeting, not yesterday, Tuesday, where we kind of, you know, just for logistics planning. At some point, someone had to grab the reins and say, let's at least plan a first General Assembly. And that's what we did on Tuesday. So tomorrow at 5:30 at our offices, there's going to be the first General Assembly. We have no idea how many we're going to expect. Let me, as long as I'm in front of you.
Can we read the address, Jay, for that, in Ventura, for people who might
be on
the stream? Yeah.
Say again, please.
Read the address of that out loud for those who might be on the stream. They might be in the
sure.
Area.
My address here is 5740 Ralston, R-A-L-S-T-O-N, Street. That's in Ventura.
And that's the site, folks, of the first assembly for the Occupy Ventura. So if you
indoors
want to
or outdoors?
We're going to have it, assuming we don't get more than 50 or 60 for this first General Assembly, keep in mind we're not occupying until next weekend. So assuming we don't get more than 50 or 60, we'll try to have it up actually in our suites or, after seeing it's after 5, maybe in some common room in the in our building. If not, there is a courtyard. It's our office building has 3 office sides.
Is this going to be a bunch of business suits, students, and Ron Paul advocates with homeless people walled out? What's going on there?
No. No one's walled out. Everyone's invited. In fact, we're in an area accessible, pretty central, pretty accessible to
now, Jay,
everyone.
Jay, we're in the studio here. We're looking at a website, Occupy Together, which I guess has kind of become the umbrella. Mm-hmm. And me and Robert have been really tripping on the counter, which counts how many communities and towns and cities around the world, around the globe now, have gone to that site and actually registered their particular occupation. It went from 450 this morning. It's up to 850 now, and it's been rising just at an absolutely insane rate. Now, are you guys would your intention be to go register over there and register as one of the sympathizing occupations? Or let's see. Let's search out and see if Ventura is on there.
I think we already are. I think Ben has done
that. We're looking
now.
We're checking up on your work here.
We have a Facebook page if you want to, not you, sir, but if Robert wants to check the Facebook page, we have Occupy Ventura Facebook, and I'm looking at it, and my gosh, it has 426 friends right now. When I looked 2 days ago, it was booming, and it was booming at 206. And I don't let me check the Twitter.
And I'd like to remind all the occupiers, wherever you are, if you're listening to the show, I know some people down actually are tuned in down at the Occupy Santa Cruz site and also in Ventura, just to give everybody a bug in your ear. The one thing that Twitter is very powerful for is feeding people. And in every occupation, man, I'm telling you time and time again, I have seen so many occupations fail because they couldn't meet that one basic requirement. If you can feed people, you can move a lot. You can do a lot. Use that Twitter, and you do it. It's simple. You just find out, call out, takeout delivery places, pizza places, sandwich places, any place that delivers food, and tweet out that number on your particular Twitter feed, and it will just get bounced. It'll get you know how that works, Jay. Retweet it a million times, and the food will come. I mean, I've seen it so bad that Zuccotti Park actually had to ask them to stop sending pizza. They had too much. So, feed the troops by tweeting, and it works.
Well, it's interesting because here at this end, I've heard from Alex DeRosi, a photojournalist who was reporting from the Occupy Santa Cruz San Lorenzo Park occupation, that homeless people there, some of them were upset at the occupation as a way of blowing up or exposing their place of living, their site, their campground. Is that a consideration? Are you planning to occupy something? Are you going to be pressing to do that, or what's the plan in Ventura?
Yeah, we're looking. First of all, we're looking to. In fact, we should have done it over the past couple of days. We're looking to try to get a permit for some park to start off in, and the reason for the permitting is they don't necessarily play so nice in Ventura, and we don't want to see arrests and a breakup of everything in the first couple minutes. Many of us of the original organizers can't actually give a commitment to a long-term occupation. If I may give a personal plug, in my own case, it's that I have a child due any day. so I certainly can't commit to being in a park for weeks. My wife said something about shooting me in the face if I did that.
I see.
While she's giving birth.
It could be a birth and the occupation. Now,
there's
come on.
This hippie midwives. Just tell her to come down to the park, man. We'll get that baby
popped
out.
We had a number
out,
of pregnant
no
people.
You'll get that baby out in the park. I will mention that to her.
I don't think the actual birth happened there, but there were several pregnant women in the Peace Camp 2010 a year ago, which was an occupation in support of homeless civil rights. We're talking with Jay Lederman of Ventura, who's beginning Occupy Ventura along with others, and who's also attorney for Commander X here. It depends who you talk to. Jay thinks he's not Commander X. He insists this guy. There's some confusion about that.
My attorney is schizophrenic lately, but it's not his fault.
Somebody's a little bit crazy, but I'm not sure.
I did that to him.
It could be. Stay tuned, Jay. We have another caller coming
in.
Stay
on the line.
Maybe we can bring this caller in. Let's see if this will work.
This might be Eric Holder, the attorney general.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. With Jay, Robert, and Chris. Hello?
Jay who?
Jay Lederman.
Jay Bird?
No, Jay, the attorney from Ventura who's been covering the infamous Doyen case.
An attorney? Ah, Jesus Christ. I can't hear you on the radio anymore. I'm a little annoyed.
We aren't on the radio, my boy. We don't have a site at the moment. We hope to be. You can hear us on the stream, freakradio.org.
Yeah, you can tune in on the net.
Can I call you back when I'm off the air, or when you're off the air?
Sure, sure.
I want to talk about that, and I don't want to be...
You should call the Huff line at 423-HUFF and leave a message there, and we can talk to you at some other point.
I've been trying to get hold of John Malkin, and he doesn't return my call. What should I do?
I don't know. I send him an email. That might work.
All right, I'm a little paranoid of the you-know-whos.
Well, leave me a message on the Huff line. You can be sure the FBI may be listening. You can never tell. I mean, Chris, after all, is a notorious figure. And
Commander X waves to
Commander
the feds.
Commander X, as he calls himself, is...
I'm sure they're listening, as if not.
He's sure they're listening. Actually, are they wasting their time on this kind of trivial shit when there are more important terrorists like Obama to take care of? I don't know.
Are you kidding? A big, important cyber terrorist like Commander X? Come on.
Yeah.
All right, well, I have to wait till I get home to hear you. How long are you on tonight?
You can always catch the archive later. The archive will be on at freakradio.org. It's archived under the name of the show, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, and good luck.
Well, you'll be on tonight till when?
Till 8.
Thank you, sir.
All right, man. And I'm glad there's a listener. Jay, you still with us?
I'm here.
So we were going to talk last time about medical marijuana and your work on that. There's an upcoming proposition that I guess some are trying to put on the ballot in place of Proposition 19 that failed.
Not by much, though. They
Proposition
want to remember
Proposition 19
that.
Failed to some extent because a lot of medical marijuana advocates, myself included, although I think I eventually voted for it, I had a lot of people, and I was wavering in both directions. There were no clear protections for medical marijuana, according to a number of, I thought, reputable arguments and authorities. The protections were not clearly enough stated, and also there was concern about corporate activity around medical marijuana that would freeze out the poor grower and give cities the option to freeze people out.
Mm-hmm.
Are these, one, do you feel that these criticisms were legitimate? And two, if so, or even if not, should we be concerned about those in the current, if you know anything about the current attempt to decriminalize, that's all marijuana, not just medical marijuana.
Well, let me answer your question, if I may, with a question, which is, are you aware of the Fed's latest and greatest?
Who knows? Tell me what.
The Feds they sent a number of letters to dispensaries today, and they have a press conference set for 11:15 tomorrow, and they are expected to announce their renewed vigor in closing down all large-scale medical marijuana dispensaries as being violative of federal law. And they're essentially, our wonderful president is saying, you know, the old days under the Bush administration of the DEA raiding everyone, those were good times, and I think we're going to decide to return to them.
Yeah. I remember him. He was the one who also talked about ending the wars abroad and all that sort of thing.
You're talking about this president?
Yeah.
The one who closed Guantanamo Bay?
Knucklehead.
He campaigned on leaving the states alone, and you know, he did with respect to the Defense of Marriage Act, but he utterly, it appears as though they started with something called the Ogden Memo, which was a clarification of their position after a statement by Holder that they would not go after these places. You know, people opened up, did business, and they cut that back a couple months ago with something called the Cole Memo, which said, look, it's still illegal and we reserve the right to go after you. And now we believe they're saying we're going to go after you.
All bets are off. The gloves are off, yeah.
You know, I hear all this stuff about the feds, but I got to tell you, most of the people in jail for drug war have nothing to do with the feds, but it's all about the state authorities. So as far as I'm concerned, all this focus, whether it's on Wham or on, you know, Obama and Holder and their perfidy, which I'm, you know, I mean, I agree with, of course, is bullshit, but it's not pertinent. You know, what's pertinent are the people that are getting arrested in Ventura and Santa Cruz for smoking or growing or buying and selling marijuana or, for that matter, any hard drugs at all. And to me, that's the problem, and it's a much bigger problem than, you know, these, you know, fancy Fed raids that happen every so often.
Well, I think that's what's going on, is that the feds are saying that these raids are not going to happen every so often, that we're rededicating our efforts, and these Fed raids are going to, you know, we're back.
But the feds, even if they're back, they can't compete with the local authorities and the state authorities.
No. Hey, listen, in the last 3 days, I've had three sets of clients, groups of clients, all arrested en masse. So, no, they're equal opportunity. Everyone's getting arrested right now.
Equal opportunity.
So, then, are you saying these are all federal arrests?
No, yesterday's was a federal arrest. Tuesday's and today's were a state arrest.
Yeah,
so
but I'm saying there's a much greater...
If your argument is that the state is arresting at a 2-to-1 rate, so we shouldn't be concerned about the feds, it's somewhat, I guess, well taken, but...
No, it's a 10-to-1 rate. It's not a 2-to-1 rate. It's a 10-to-1 rate or a 20-to-1 rate. I mean,
okay.
I mean, as far as I know, there's a huge problem at the state level, and of course there's a problem at the federal level. But to, you know, what we need to do. I mean, what kind of power do you have with respect to the federal government? Well, as an attorney, you can challenge them case by case in court, and maybe get an injunction, hardy har har, and take it to the Roberts Court and kiss your ass goodbye and all that sort of thing. Or, you know, but at the local level, you can embarrass the hell out of the local DA. You can do Occupy Ventura and Occupy Santa Barbara and get people marching on the courthouse to stop this huge waste of public money and waste of lives. And they'll have to stop prosecuting if there's enough pressure, regardless of the feds and the state.
That's true. But we haven't reached that critical mass yet.
No, but I know that tomorrow when you do your meeting, you'll begin that process.
Well, Jay has, you know, a couple of books out and everything. I'd just like to point out in a website. So if anybody wants to get information on your rights to do with marijuana or any legal work with regard to that, LiedermanDivine.com, right, Jay?
Jay? Yes.
Yeah, LiedermanDivine.com.
That's right. You can go to either my website or the normal website, NORML.org. We did write a book for Normal called Normal's Guide to Medical Marijuana Law in California. It's a little actually difficult to find on Normal's site the way they have it arranged. So if you go through our site, all proceeds go to Normal. Our link takes you right to the Normal page to purchase the book. I think it's I'm positive, as a matter of fact. It's $15 for one and $25 for two, and they'll do if you're a dispensary or a larger organization out there, you send them an email, and they'll cut you a break on a more numerous purchase.
Whereas if you're a homeless person, kiss your ass goodbye because you can't afford the book.
I suppose you knew that was coming, Jay.
Come on.
The reason I mention it is Keith McHenry has a book he's selling, but it's also online free. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I hope that anything I write will eventually be free, but again, of course, I'm not struggling right now to make a living, as I imagine you are.
Fuck that. I'm charging $25 a pop for my book. Jay, you working on that, right?
Well, you're not exactly, you know, a wealthy, you know, well-to-do character.
And I'm tired of being poor, too, man.
I'm working on it. And I will note that Normal is a nonprofit organization that needs these funds to keep going. And quite frankly, $15 for a legal book is very, very cheap.
I think we're winning. I think in the end, when you look back over the last 25 years, when it comes to the pot battle, overall we are winning. It's considerably looser now. And is it perfect? No, but that just means we need to keep fighting.
That's the kind of argument I heard from Tom Kelly, the judge, in this interview, and I think it sucks. I think if you looked at how people were viewing the situation in 1975 and you told them what was happening now, they would be horrified. they would be utterly aghast. They wouldn't know what to do. I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on now compared to what we need to have happening. And I don't think we're winning in any real sense at all. I mean, I think we're trying to hold back. Look at the feds. They're moving forward to reclaim this this bullshit position, which, you know, you elect a guy like you don't elect him. A bunch of mindless Democrats elect him, and you get this, you know, more war, more repression. Well, I don't want to blame you for this, Jay. You didn't vote for Obama, right?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I voted for Commander X.
I don't think there was a Commander X. I think that's a dirty, dirty
I'll run on
lie.
The anonymous party. I'll run on the anonymous party. Yeah. There we go. Write in vote.
All right.
Commander
yeah.
X.
So
and by the way, please refer to me as Lieutenant Commander J.
Lieutenant Commander J. Oh, now he wants a position.
No.
I tell you, the last thing you want to be associated with right now is Commander X.
I'm toxic.
Yeah,
and I really do publicly take that back. We don't want to taunt or anything to the federal government. We've nothing but respect, Robert. You know that.
Of course.
Right.
Well, you do.
Jay, did you bump your head or something over there?
I might have.
I mean, I'm civil to them and everything. I tip my hat. That's all they're going to get. We're still enemies.
So I was asking you, Chris, and I guess you're holding a meeting which is, you know, hopefully going to be open to all classes of people, including the grubby and the stinky.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mean, how are they going to hear about it? Have you putting out the word among
the
Ventura homeless?
He said he's got a Facebook.
A lot of homeless don't have computers, although some may.
There is a Facebook and a Twitter, and it's gone out. It's gone out on a number of lists. Serves and email blasts. I haven't been responsible for that. Had I not had another batch of clients arrested today, my intention was to actually go down to the locale that we talked about off, down from the main drag in Ventura and actually flyer down there.
Very good.
It appears I'm not going to get that chance because I've been...
Well, I have the same problem. I created flyers, and then I forgot to give them out when I showed up at the protest today.
I didn't even get a chance to create
the
flyers.
But I'm with
you
in the
studio.
So everybody
wants a flyer. We got our flyers ready. See, we're one step up on slick attorney guy. Look at that.
Well, you know, now here's an interesting question. What percentage of your clients are pro bono, Jay? Of course, you don't have to answer to these questions, but I'm going to ask them anyway.
Well, obviously, it varies from time to time.
At the current time.
What percentage? I don't know. I don't know how many clients in 2%, total I have.
30% or 90%?
Huh?
Closest to 2, 90, or 30%?
No. Probably somewhere between 10 and 30.
That's a pretty large percentage.
But I got to tell you, that number is going to go down in terms of percentage. Because I don't know if you've been reading the papers, but I did recently take on one very high-profile, very large pro bono case.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is going to limit my ability to take others. But that's okay, because I feel that one will actually do more for the rights of all than me taking scores of other cases.
Mm. I promise to try to be good this week. That was such a nice little speech that I want to promise I'll be trying to be good.
He's talking about the self-described Commander X.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye.
And X is, really, X's case is truly an important case in American both current jurisprudence and jurisprudence going forward.
Why is Commander X's case important, Jay?
Well,
and describe what it is, because people who just tuned in may not know what we're talking about here.
Well, okay. I mean, we can go over the basics. It's essentially he's accused of what's known as a DDoS attack, a distributed denial of service attack on computers in Santa Cruz County, such that they were inaccessible to the citizens of Santa Cruz. And what is behind that was assuming all of that is true, let's assume he did that. It's a DDoS, they call it an attack, but it's really a protest, and it's really occupying space on those servers just to kind of get some attention, to get a point. In this case, to draw attention to, allegedly, to draw attention to Peace Camp 2010, which I would think your listeners are familiar with.
And for those who don't know, Piecing Up 2010 is a homeless protest against the anti-homeless laws, most specifically the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, which criminalizes homeless people after 11 o'clock at night who have no place to sleep, except for 46 of them at the Pauley Loft. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it's joined with another case that some call the San Jose 14 or the PayPal 14 or the PayPal case or the Operation Payback, whatever you call it. 14 people were arrested and are being prosecuted for a distributed denial of service protest on the computers of PayPal, who PayPal refused to process donations for WikiLeaks. They would, if you wanted to donate to the KKK, that's just fine with PayPal, but politically they didn't agree with WikiLeaks, so they would not process donations, and a number of people participated in what has been referred to as a digital sit-in. And, you know, as with all protests, there's a question as to whether the conduct's legal or illegal, whether it's speech, whether it transcends speech into conduct, and those are legal issues we'll point out. But I'll note that, you know, far different from the sit-ins of the civil rights era, and by the way, if there was such a thing as the civil rights era, what are we in now, the Patriot Act era?
Something like that.
I mean, I really do think so. I hate to think that there was an era where we had civil rights and that's elapsed, but I think that's another
conversation. There was an era when people were fighting for civil rights.
Right. Well, and which, I mean, what are we doing now? What's going on at Occupy Santa Cruz and Occupy Ventura?
That's, well, I think it's important to point out. I just want to point out one thing to our listeners about this. That was an excellent description, Jen. I want to thank you for that. And just point out that there are a number of modern countries, Northern European countries, you know, Canada, Belgium, Denmark, Holland, Australia, who look at these protests that Jay just described in a very different way. And they're nowhere near as criminalized, if criminalized at all, in those countries. And so this is not behavior that is universally agreed upon by, you know, by modern democratic countries to be, you know, anything but what it is, which is a protest. So,
yeah. Well, and that's going to be the issue, is taking the protests that we're used to in American history, which are, you know, people out in public, you know, the soapbox on the corner, that type of traditional speech, and transposing it upon the digital era and the computer medium. So it raises new and interesting type of ideas, because all the federal cases before dealing with DDoS and dealing with stuff like that really had to do with some sort of, you know, malicious type intent and you know, people really messing with people on their computers. And there was no damage here. There was no, although PayPal, by the way, I don't know if I told you this, Chris, PayPal is claiming
million,
a $5.6 million loss, even though their site was never knocked offline.
$4.6 million or something like that. But
now, who had this loss?
PayPal is saying their loss was $5.6 million over this these series of attacks. And it really raises all kinds of new questions as to, you know...
I think they should give us money, Jay. I was thinking about Anonymous should send them a bill for consulting. I mean, we help to point out the flaws to these people. Why don't we get to put in the big consulting bills like these... what these companies are doing to inflate these prices. That's how they come to these,
well,
you know.
You clearly don't, because you had nothing to do with it.
Correct.
And when it is very worth noting that when, you know, Chris says we, he means Anonymous in general,
in
not
a corporate
not
sort
him.
Of way, yes.
The royal we.
I reserve that for my own activities, if you don't mind.
Sorry.
It is a show, yeah.
So let me ask about this PayPal attack. I'm wondering, for those who still use PayPal, as I occasionally do, though try not to, the reason for the PayPal attack was, of course, its refusal to accept money for WikiLeaks activist Julian Assange, right?
That's correct.
Have they changed their position?
They have not, no.
No, the boycott holds.
So how can people who want to give money to Assange do so?
Go to WikiLeaks.org. and they have set up various workarounds. One of them is you can buy an incredibly overpriced bumper sticker or T-shirt. There's a Bitcoin placed there for those who are familiar with Bitcoin and using that process of donating. And they also have made arrangements. My understanding is they've made arrangements with regular bank cards that is now going through a nonprofit that operates in Europe, a nonprofit dedicated to helping people in a financial blockade. So there are ways on that site to help out financially.
Any updates might be on the Assange case in England that either of you have?
No, I'm not aware that.
I can give just the latest update. I mean, it's not decided yet. He's still fighting the extradition to Sweden. He still has an ankle bracelet on him. He's still under, I guess you could call it euphemistically, mansion arrest.
Yeah, it's somewhat better than the Bradley Manning situation.
Yeah, he's doing somewhat better. But as he pointed out on a recent interview, it's still a gilded cage. He still can't leave. So.
And Bradley Manning, does anybody have any news about him? He's, of course, the U.S. serviceman who... is suspected of blowing the whistle on the U.S. Army and government murder overseas through a variety of cables that were actually not very top secret.
Bradley's physical conditions have improved considerably in the last few months, this much we know, and from visits of his family and from the tweets that we've been getting. And this was just really a big focus of the movement, is to get him situated in a place where he's not literally being tortured. It's going to be a long case. An espionage trial of this depth might take years to resolve. So we're,
I don't think he's charged with espionage. I don't think he's charged with anything, actually, that I'm aware of.
Well, maybe
I'm wrong.
Most
likely, Jay, you will, of course, rush in to be his attorney, correct?
No, I think he's all set.
He's all set.
He's way more famous than Commander X.
Yes, Commander X. Mr. Manning, what he did is a phenomenal thing for the country, and I'm really very impressed by his courage. But all the action for me is with Commander X.
Well, I'd like to throw this back on Bradley. I'd like to point out to the world that Bradley is a hacker. So, you can all fuck yourself because he's one of us. I mean, it was a hacker that snitched him out, and that's true, too. But,
Bradley Manning.
He was a part of our underground, and the philosophy of hackers is what brought him to do and to have the courage to do what he did. So, I think what I'm hoping, Jay, for my case and what I'm hoping to do with these interviews is to give the world a little bit different viewpoint on what a hacker is and maybe why we do some of the things we do. And, we can be heroes, too. So.
Indeed. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you something. I just want to bounce off what you said. When you, Chris, were arrested, the papers really liked the headline, homeless hacker, and they called you the homeless hacker and all of that. And I was very upset by it because I noted in a number of those articles, I think it was particularly the CNET one that started it, a very good article, by the way, and we're appreciative of that. What they did mention at the bottom of the CNET article that this isn't the first, homeless hacker, and
Adrian Lamo was, but I thought about that too when I was inside, and maybe it's time to turn that page. Homeless people are good people, and I grew up with the homeless hacker as my hero. I mean, he really was. When he was at large, when Waymo was still at large, he was a legend to us teenage hackers growing up, and it wasn't until he many, many, many years later that he turned, to the dark side and turned to being a confidential informant of the FBI. And, it only takes one hero in a generation to inspire, tons of people to get involved. And that's he did inspire me. So maybe now with a new homeless hacker, Commander X, on the scene, maybe now we can use that persona and his honorableness to sort of turn that page. Because I'd love to be the new homeless hacker. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, that's fantastic.
Put that to rest,
Or homeless hack. You be the judge. Him in light of what he did to Bradley Manning, but I think you've turned it around and owned it, and that's fantastic.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to turn it all around and own it, and that's what these
things
are about.
I'm looking at the San Francisco Indie Bay website. Apparently, Occupy San Francisco has been raided by police and city workers. It was actually at midnight last night.
Yes.
Have you guys followed any of that?
I did, just a little bit of it.
What do you know, Jay? Tell us what you heard.
I don't know much more than that.
We have the unless you were in San Francisco, it's probably better to get it from the Indie Bay. For those who are interested, San Francisco Indie Media, does have indiebay.org. Just go to click on San Francisco and you'll see
What's
some
opinion, Jay, as an activist? Are they going to crack down on this nationwide or in a general way, or are they going to... is the inclination going to be to let it go for a little while and step back and see what's happening, or?
You know, I don't know. They're certainly going to let Wall Street go because it's already taken root, and there's not much they can do without really stirring up a hornet's nest of media coverage. You know, as days go on, media gets better and more in tune with Occupy Wall Street. I'm concerned about them trying to nip Occupy together in the bud. So I don't know.
You have some indication that is happening. Occupy Together, of course, is the website where you can see these 800-plus occupations charted.
Unfolding, yeah.
No, I mean, I've heard, you know, initial reports were that Chicago, you know, they were arresting him, and then it turned out that the reports were wrong, and actually the police were there and protecting. And then, of course, we got these terrible reports out of San Francisco last night that they essentially came by and...
Well, here's what it says.
And arrested everyone.
Let me read this. On the evening of October 5th, after hundreds marched throughout the downtown earlier in the day, the San Francisco Police Department delivered a letter to occupiers declaring that this encampment is a violation of law. At 1:15 a.m., police in riot gear moved in to create a line between occupiers and their supplies. San Francisco Department of Public Works employees then pulled up trucks on Market Street and began to clear out the site, taking the camp kitchen, tents, furniture, and more. Occupiers resisted by building a barricade around police and Department of Public Works trucks. Demonstrators physically placed themselves in front of the departing trucks repeatedly on Main Street. One person was arrested on Main Street after having been assaulted with a nightstick. These photographs are a continuation of a series, and there's a series of photos downtown.
God bless them for standing their ground. Right on, guys. That's the way. That's how you do it, though. That's what you got to do.
So it looks like the new strategy is to avoid arresting people. And there's a lot of interesting signs here. Land of the thief, home of the slave, stop buying stuff, start making it.
Stop buying stuff,
some cool flyers.
That's cool. I like that one.
Cool signs. There's a lot of, you know, very colorful and kind of interesting photos. United We Stand. And there's a picture of the notice the San Francisco Police Department gave.
One single copy for hundreds of people, of course.
And we have the guys with the nightsticks on their helmets and so forth. The bullies in blue.
Yeah, we're familiar with them. They all look the same as in the Mideast. Cops look the same in every country.
And it's I'm looking for more news, and I don't see a lot more news about what happened. I suppose it'll be, we'll get the establishment view in the, the San Francisco Chronicle, if people want to read that or online.
If you're listening to this down at the Occupy Santa Cruz, give us a call on the listener line. Let us know what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's what we want to do is give them a call and see what is happening. Have you heard of police actually going after any other of the occupations in the country, Jay? Because I haven't seen it, but then again, there's no...
I'll tell you that literally for almost all day long, every day for the last 3 days, I've either been in court or been tending to the mass arrests of, you know, not just clients, but, you know, clients and friends that we've been working with, people that are following the law, but they're arresting nonetheless.
Right.
So I've had quite the week.
Well,
so this is quite the crackdown, is what you're saying. This is a pretty serious business.
Well, if you're related, but it sure seems awfully coincidental if they're not related.
So I want to thank you for calling in and kind of roll along, because I'm going to try to get back to the protest before I'm out of time. I only have 20 minutes left in the show.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I appreciate your, we didn't really have much time, or I didn't take much time to talk with you about the details of, you know, what's going on in Ventura around... This really interests me, if you can get some information on local issues. I mean, I in terms of the drug war in Ventura. I mean, I continue to believe that the federal prosecutions are a small part of it proportionately.
Yeah,
and that, to
so
me...
nasty.
What's that?
They're so much nastier than the state, you know. I mean, the difference between, you know, 6 months in jail after losing a trial and a mandatory minimum of 10 years makes the Fed...
Well, that's a good point, for
sure.
No question. But the question is, if you look at the whole landscape and the number of years in jail that everyone is serving, and, you know, compared to the state with the federal, I've never seen clear comparisons there, and I'd like to know that because, as I said, more importantly, we actually impact the local stuff. And I mean, this is not for you, perhaps, because of all your pro bono work, but this is gravy for lawyers, man. This is gravy for lawyers and the courts. This is the blood grease that keeps the machine going, this drug war stuff. And, I hate to give it a lot of publicity unless the publicity is to the resistance. And, of course, you're a part of the resistance, but the legal resistance is such a, you know, a rigged game. Perhaps you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah.
Well, we're in a community, too, where there's no justice. All the judges are bought, and you don't win a case, period, if you're on our side.
No justice, no peace. That's what I say.
If you're on our side, you just don't win them, so.
Thanks, Jay, for calling in.
Thank you, Jay.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good talking to you guys.
Well,
yeah.
We'll do it again.
Peace.
You got it.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Jay Lederman, and down in Ventura, and his website is www.LedermanDivine. LedermanDivine.com. So we've got a few minutes left. I'm going to try to give a call to one of our local guys down there at the occupation and see if they're still occupying or if they've all gone home to
or been arrested.
Key and
there were cops
or been
around
arrested.
When I left, you know.
Actually, the way to do this is probably to pick up the phone before I start dialing. That would always be helpful.
I believe that there's only one of two choices. They either all got busted or they're still occupying.
Well, we'll see.
I have faith.
You have faith.
I do.
Well, we're ringing Alex DeRossi, who's a photographer, who's done some posting on Indie Bay. Bradley's done some great posting, but he hasn't given me his phone number, so I can't call Bradley. And Bradley isn't the kind of guy who likes to talk on the radio much anyway, but Alex has done some talking. And
hello?
Hey, Alex, this is Free Radio calling in. It's 20 to 8. Do you have any new updates for us?
Hey, Robert, the General Assembly is still going on, and they're going over a number of options. People brought up the idea of moving the location to Mission Plaza. That's what they're bandying about right now.
Mission Plaza, why? That's way up the hill, kind of out of the way. It's not near an area where you can be legal, which is like the courthouse, theoretically legal, unless they go after you for, you know, this bizarre misdemeanor 647E.
I'm curious, what's the argument against just staying put and occupying the spot that they're on?
People are feeling pressure. They're saying they're feeling pressure that this is a spot that the police are more
likely.
It's going
to be pressure everywhere. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, the cops don't like you anywhere doing this, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's not getting a lot of support. They're talking about it, and they're going over options.
Are police officers on the scene?
The sergeant, and I forget what his name is, but he's the one who does the city council meetings, and he does the downtown walking beat. He was here for about an hour at least. Officer Bush, I believe, is that his name?
Sergeant Bush, yeah.
Sergeant Bush, and I spoke to him, and he said he was not spying on the group, and I'm just quoting him here, and he said that he was here in case the group decided they wanted to start marching, the police would clear the roads for them.
Yeah, I'll bet they would. And open up the backs of those paddy wagons wide. Oh, yeah.
Well, alternately, I think that in Santa Cruz, the police don't mind if they can walk, march around with the protesters and sort of give it a, it's a nice little protest, and then we can all go home later approach. I don't think they necessarily want to arrest the protesters for walking around, provided they do so in a way that is, doesn't involve any property damage, doesn't involve any...
Well, see, I would point out there's bathrooms there at the courthouse. You know, it's a park with public restrooms. They had them open quite late. They were still open when I left.
I don't know if he's saying that Sergeant Bush was suggesting if they want to march to Mission Plaza, they give them an escort, or just as they want to march anywhere.
Said anywhere, really. He was just... Keeping
the police station. Yeah, the police station actually has a... it isn't very big, the police
march
station.
Right over to the jail.
Yeah, or possibly... we're turning ourselves in, yeah.
It's right across the street.
So is there... How big is the crowd, Alex? Is it okay to talk to you, or are we just distracting
you? Oh, no, that's great. Yeah, I've been listening for a while, and it's good to take a break.
How big is the group there now? Is it diminishing? Is it increasing? What's happening?
I'd say it's diminished slightly. It's probably about 100 people, maybe 120. It got cold once the sun went down, and... A lot of people left at that point.
Are there a lot of sleeping bags out? Is there a lot of indication that there's going to be people are preparing to go to camp for the night?
Yeah, they're definitely talking about camping right now. I don't see any equipment necessarily, but several people have
mentioned that they're ready to camp right now, and they're discussing if they are going to do that.
Is there any proposal for people to move to the courthouse area?
They're still talking about that as a backup in case, you know, they have to, if they get forced out.
Uh-huh.
But not a real detailed discussion of the county property versus city property and exactly where people would go.
Now I have some secret underground information that was bestowed upon me before I left. So I have a question. Has anybody by chance built a really large teepee there?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there is.
You know, it is dark.
There's a rumor
going
around that there's a possibility of a really large
teepee. There's some applause I hear in the
background.
Cool. What is that about there, Alex?
Mission Plaza? Is that what you asked, Robert? I'm sorry.
What was that about, that applause?
Oh, you know, I can't exactly hear the speakers from this distance.
No problem. And you're talking to us, a far more important group, as you know.
That's,
the media is so much more important than what it's covering. You know that. Fluff us, please.
Well, you know, overall what the media does is super important, and we do shift between groups pretty quickly, and we get a lot done.
So nobody assaulted anybody in this General Assembly? No one threw any tomatoes at each other?
No, people have been pretty peaceful this evening. Mm-hmm. A couple of people wanted to speak out of turn, but people explained to them about the process, and they seemed to get it.
Who facilitated this?
The whole evening's meeting?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know his name, but there's one individual who's been doing it.
What does he look like?
He has the beard, a mustache beard, man in his 20s or 30s.
It isn't one of the same group that facilitated the Tuesday meeting at Laurel Park.
He spoke briefly that day, and I believe he's involved in one of the working groups.
And the crowd is considerably smaller than the 300 who gathered there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what the numbers on that first day was. It seemed like a larger number than I saw reported, but today it's much smaller,
but
at least by a third or a fourth. You know, it's about a fourth the size.
But perhaps more determined.
You know, I wouldn't even say that this is some of the core organizers that I've seen or the most active people. It just seems to represent who's here tonight, and maybe they're gauging when it'll be best to effectively start participating again, because it's cold, it's wet, and people are still deciding on so many details.
But they're not a part of those decisions. They're just going to come when the decisions have been made, I guess, huh?
That's what it looks like, and maybe that's just part of this protest, that the people who participate are going to be constantly shifting. And I know you constantly hear the people who are perceived as leaders, you know, they try to emphasize they're not leaders. They don't, and they really don't even respond well to the most basic questions. You know, like, do you want to? You know, would it be helpful to use a megaphone? Things like that. You know, people don't even really want to answer questions. But it's definitely part of that.
Give it time. Give it time. I mean, it's a process that, you know, I think in a certain way has been unique to this particular round of protests. So.
Yeah, it's been great watching people come together this way and organize.
Is the protest, I noticed it seemed to be pretty tightly controlled and dictated by the leadership, or I should say the facilitatorship, on Tuesday. A lot of people were shut down and shut up, although they
I thought that was clear, that there is leadership. And
I mean, they were trying to get, and I was appreciative that they were trying to get a place to go to and get some decisions made, but it was, you know, there was no consensus process really happening. It was
and a lot of these people who are perceived as leaders, they don't realize that their charisma and their experience, it gets a lot of results in certain, and it's leading whether they want to consider leading or not.
Are the same people doing the majority of the talking, or is there a broader number of people contributing?
It looks like less broad. There's just a couple of main people talking, and they got a lot of reports from the working groups, the contacts from the working groups.
What kind of what reports? How many working groups are there?
Boy, there's too many to really for me to know right now. There's, I'd say, 10 to 15, and there's new ones popping up.
Are they actually doing something in your view? I mean, I saw actual tents and tarps go up and a structure. I saw some food.
Yeah, there was a lot of food. And then, you know, the media group was talking about that they needed more people to help contact all the various, you know, TV outlets and whatnot. And then there's basically just one person in charge of the website, and he was asking, you know, well, I post what I think is really important, but I need to know, you know, how quickly I can act on things. And basically he was saying that the website was mostly just him right now.
I haven't seen too much on the website. Homeless people are, of course, the focus of my show. Any homeless people talking about any homeless issues?
The homeless people have been getting blocked a lot. I think people are perceiving that as a repetitive issue, that people are speaking out of turn when they want to bring that up, and especially the indigenous homeless here. When they come up, they...
So people are shouting, I'm starving and I'm freezing, a bit out of turn, eh?
Yeah. Can you imagine that?
I'm all wet, my clothes are sopping all over me, and the homeless service center won't open up the clothes bin, and the cops are after me with tickets. Shut up, your speaking time is up, sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess they just like to focus on them, you know. It's just like high school, when you wanted to be popular, you went homeless. But, I would think that since the location is here, they would have it built in the process where they would, you know, hear people who live here pretty much automatically, but for at least a minute or something, and not to trivialize it, but give them some time. But they get, people are giving them the block sign pretty much automatically now, you get this feeling that the crowd just has this reaction. They've heard it before, and they don't want to hear it again.
And so are the homeless people responding with the block sign in return?
No, they generally don't know the process, and they haven't really stuck it out to learn the process.
We have the process handbook that they're handing out. So you know what? We'll go down there and we'll have some seminars on educating homeless people on this particular process, and then they can engage more people in the process. So
that's
an easy thing for Huff to fix. I mean, that's what Huff is designed for. So
if anybody wants to pay any attention to Huff, some homeless people like us, others don't.
I like you just fine. I think Huff is fine organization
you
to be part
Commander
of.
You are Commander X, or are you? That's an interesting question.
Commander X fully endorses Huff.
I see. Well, there you are.
Formally and officially.
Well, we'll see if you can get the majority support from the homeless community in Santa Cruz.
Well, I don't know.
More important than Huff, which is largely housed and not houseless.
I think I'm going to start a hacker group, the homeless hackers of Santa Cruz.
Better than the homeless hacks.
Well, for sure.
And I should mention...
Go ahead.
I didn't have a chance to mention yet. They're planning a march for tomorrow, and they've been handing out a map.
What time and where?
3:30, and it's starting here at the San Lorenzo Park location, which is adjacent to the duck pond, just in case people are tuning in. And... it's going to go through Pacific and wind around and take a tour of the four or five major banks in the area. And it's like Chase is fifth on the list over there on Ocean, and then wind back here.
Are they being careful not to offend any of the local businesses?
They really didn't talk about it, but too much in detail. But they definitely emphasized they wanted to make a point. And there's been people just randomly commenting all day about what they want to do when they get to the bank. Just generally, act up, get excited, voice their opinion. And this is, for many people, I've been hearing that, this is what they came for, to go talk to the banks.
So this is going to start at 3:30. Any other actions discussed or planned or likely in the near future?
Not that I've heard, except for, they're talking about the possible moves, and then I believe general assemblies are still on for 6 p.m. every night from where they, wherever they...
What do you honestly think the chances are that they'll move from their current location?
It looked very unlikely. Mission Plaza received some support, but maybe a dozen or two dozen people, so I'd say unlikely there. I know people are concerned about the restrooms, like you brought up. And
the restrooms are closed now, right? The park restrooms?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they closed them. I checked.
Has anybody come up with a porta-potty plan like the Peace Camp 2010 did? No.
Yeah, Ed Fry mentioned that, I believe, the first night, and someone else mentioned it again this evening.
It's been mentioned, but not put into motion.
No, nothing official, and then
some
it was casually mentioned.
Piss in the bushes these days.
No, it's just this is our job now. We talked to Santa Cruz, and now Santa Cruz, it's your turn. Come up with a port-a-john. They're easy to rent. We'll go get it. We got a pickup truck. Just call us. You know, call Ed Fry up, call one of the occupiers up on the phone, and we'll come get the port-a-john. Rent it for us. Deal with that.
Who's
yeah,
we?
Make it legal. Yeah,
rich people out there listening to us, man. People with money and means. Come on. It's their occupation, too. And if they've got the means to buy one, get on that.
So is there people giving out contact numbers or email addresses for those who want to support Occupy Santa Cruz?
Well, yeah, I've not heard those given out, like, you know, in the meeting form, to the public, to the group, but people have said that they are the contacts. That's the language they're using, who are speaking for these working groups.
Well, give them Steve Plake's contact.
Yeah, there is one activist, Steve Plake, who has given out his phone number publicly to the homeless, the houseless, and the housed alike. He's a longtime activist, often on this show, and he was facilitating the meeting this morning, as I understand it.
Yeah, he was. So.
He definitely opened the meeting this morning. He was one of the first three people circled up. But he also made an announcement at the beginning of tonight's General Assembly at 6. He announced that they are working and they will have instituted a phone number, like a hotline phone number for anyone who needs legal assistance.
Right, no, we're talking, though, about a phone number people can call in to
just for generally, like for pick us on a donate.
Call in
I see.
And we're talking about
for
the
information.
We're talking about the porta-potty stuff, not for information.
I'm sorry.
Things to this protest so that they need, whether it's pizza, back rubs, sex workers,
well,
a porta-potty,
the pizza stuff and
it.
The food stuff you can do right now. You can call any pizza joint in Santa Cruz and have
that.
Them deliver a large stack to San Lorenzo Park.
And if people want to call
in
on these issues, they can. Steve Plache's number is 334-8692 if you want to get in touch with him. 334-8692. I'm taking the liberty of giving out his number. If I can
to help Occupy Santa Cruz, if you got some help, anything.
Particularly, you know, I mean, you're pretty glib about this, you know, Commander X. I don't think, if they haven't got a porta potty, they're not going to get one in the next 10 minutes, I don't think. But if they, if anybody wants to give one, you know, I'll give the funding for one, which I think involves, what, $300 a month or something like that?
I mean, just, you know, you won't know until you put it out there. You know me, I'm a half full kind of guy. So.
Right. No, I think it's good to put it out there, but I think it's also good to note that it isn't out there right now.
Well, no, we don't have one. We need one.
Right. It's not
get
there.
Get on that.
Whereas, you know, Peace Camp 2010 began with a porta potty, and it began with one attorney and a bunch of homeless people and some housed homeless supporters. This one began with 300 people in a meeting and, you know, 10 working groups. And I'm just finding myself wondering, you know, kind of what the fuck. Though, again, you know, I'm not offering to provide a porta potty myself. I'm just making radio comment. So
and that's what they asked earlier, too, if, you know, just briefly, if anyone has the money on hand right now to donate for the porta potty. And, you know, it was. I don't know if that was a serious statement, but
it is a serious statement.
Yes.
Of course it is.
Well, nobody did, though. That's his point. Nobody in that group of how many people? 100 people?
100 people.
Had a penny to donate for a porta potty?
Not one person even moved or responded.
So you keep doing it. You just keep saying it over and over until somebody does. I mean, that's the way
it
works.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, for sure. I think that's a good idea, but I think
it's just the life,
it's also appropriate to go, huh? You know.
Well, it seems the whole consensus building process.
Keep doing it.
It's slow.
Keep working at it.
Yeah, it'll just make
maybe
a
that's
difference.
It. Maybe it is the process. I suppose, although, you know, it seems to me an even more important part of this because a lot of these people are middle class and they need these kind of facilities. I guess maybe they can, you know, they guess they can go buy something at the local bar and use the bathroom there or something. I guess people can do that if they want to, but of course. Homeless people and will do what they always do, which is...
go down to the river and take a piss.
Hey, man.
It's right fucking there. Why would you not?
Well, because it's the wee-wee.
I'm
going to
take a bath in it in the morning.
It's not good for the fish. We, God's sake.
Oh, what I'm going to do to the fish in the morning is going to be really bad for me. Because I got some body odor to knock off me, baby.
You're telling me.
I'm going in
actually,
that water.
Actually, he smells fine, folks. But a shower might always be an option.
People
have suggested
right
it
river.
To me on occasion, and I...
And salmon are going
to
be dying like crazy.
Anyway, Alex, anything you want to sum up with? I mean... you want to be the, again, for people who want to contact Steve Plache, who seems to be a person who knows what's going on, maybe he can refer you to the the upcoming number, which if the line is ever set up, and it, when it's set up for Occupy Santa Cruz, I'm sure it will be. It's 334-8692, 334-8692. And if there are any angels out there or deep pockets out there that want to kick down for a porta potty, Paul Lee, do you hear us? You know, get it together and get in touch with Plaich or get in touch with Ed Fry. And these are guys who can make it happen, who are really out there on the ground and who have a lot of energy, at least for the moment.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's an occupation too, folks. Anything you can do to help. If you bring down a plate of pasta or a tin of cookies, you know, anything can help. Just come on by, hang out, you know, drop off whatever you've got to help sustain the occupiers. And that's how this will work, from support from the community. So,
and it looks like we are being occupied. We have Occupy Free Radio happening right here.
I'm going to unoccupy.
Uncle Dennis has arrived to regale us with From the Cream to the Dregs. Alex, thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Robert.
I'll be seeing you shortly.
Yeah, see you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, man. And I think, Chris, thank you for coming into the studio.
You're welcome.
Commander X, as some have called you. Under exciting X and
well, I'll be back, I promise. All I'm right. going to head on down to the occupation myself. So
I will be heading
I encourage
the same
everybody
direction.
To go on down there, and now's, you know, now's our chance. Let's start clawing it back inch by inch, folks. Occupy everything.
There you go. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
And you can reach me if you want to leave a message about this program or thoughts you may have. If you want to be on, you want to be on the air, hush up, you guys. I'm still on the air. You can reach me at 423-4833. And I'll be back on today's Thursday, Sunday morning, 9:30, if I'm not in jail, and along with the rest of these folks down at the occupation, because unless I get a much better offer, I'll probably be sleeping in the wet, slimy ground down there at the San Lorenzo Park. I'm sorry. I'm going to be out there with the mass of the people. I'm trying to take a positive view on this whole thing. Fighting for liberty and justice. A little tired, I must admit. Anyway, stay tuned for Uncle Dennis, who has a new ale to regale you with. And he has some upcoming tunes that will no doubt tickle your toot-de-doot-de-doo. And tickle your timpani. Thank you. Yes, nicely put, Uncle Dennis. And he'll tell you why there is no fucking free radio on the air. He will give us all the...
I can't tell you why there isn't.
He can't tell us, but who knows? Maybe you can call him up and get him to tell you who might tell you what's going on.
We need tree monkeys.
Tree monkeys. There you are. Tree monkeys are the answer. Tree monkeys and porta potties. That's what's needed.
The transmitter is at the new location, but the antenna isn't.
Well, there you are. So, in other words, we need... And also, if people... And we have a tree monkey here who has already volunteered to do some monkeying around. What about the old days when there was a transmitter on a bike cart? Actually, somebody asked me how much it would cost to get a second transmitter and run around on a bike cart while all this is being negotiated. Any thoughts on
that?
Well, to put together a transmitter, how much is a transmitter?
We've got one.
No, but a second transmitter while you're putting...
We've got a second transmitter.
Oh, so all you need are the monkeys who want to run, or the bikies who want to bike around.
Well, they need to have some way to connect to the studio.
Right. So, but you're not. That's an option that might happen, Uncle Dennis.
I'm not going to organize it.
There you go. You see, we have people who have a lot of energy, but then again, you only have so much energy. If you know what I mean? For folks who want to see Free Radio back on the air, a tree monkey in your offer to be a tree monkey and possibly.
FRSC at freakradio.org. Let us know when you're available.
There you go.
You'll need a climbing harness.
And if you have that, and some time to do it. And you'll get the gratitude of the community who wants to see and wants to hear Free Radio back on the air.
If anybody does.
I think some do. I've heard them say that, at least. Thank you. And thank you all for listening. And this will be archived at huffsantacruz.org. And Uncle Dennis is up next.
All right. To get next to you, I got that intention. see a gypsy woman down on Basin Street. Gonna get some of that voodoo, gonna make it work.